Good morning. It's 10:15-ish, and we're calling this meeting of the Tax Committee to order. Thank you for not starting without me. I guess you can. Actually, Mr. Chair, can you?
Technically, I could, but I would never do that to you.
No, not today, Gregory.
Today is not
the day. All right, well, thanks for being here. First item on our agenda is moving the minutes for April 8th, 2026. Representative Joy. All right, Representative Joy moves the minutes for April 8th, 2026. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, no. Motion carries. The minutes are adopted. All right, we have one item on our agenda today, House File 4841. Representative Agbaje. So we had a conversation in this committee before about the critical issue of HCMC, and Representative Agbaje, Representative Nadeau, welcome to the committee, and please go ahead and introduce your bill.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the Tax Committee. Representative Nadeau and I are here today to discuss House File 4841. This bill provides an option as a way forward to provide financial stability for Hennepin County Medical Center. HCMC is a level one trauma safety net hospital in the heart of Minneapolis in Hennepin County. HCMC provides primary care and treats specialized situations like after catastrophic injuries such as burns and other forms of acute care. It is also one of the busiest emergency rooms, seeing more than 100,000 patients, both adults and children, each year. The hospital provides care to Hennepin County residents, but also serves patients throughout the state and region. At least one-third of all patients system-wide reside outside of Hennepin County, and that number rises to 40% of patients for those needing trauma or burn care. HCMC is also a teaching hospital where it educates the next generation of doctors. Many of the residents and fellows who go through one of HCMC's 22 accredited programs stay in Minnesota. And from those ranks, some of them go to our rural programs and rural hospitals and medical centers. The hospital also treats those who are most vulnerable in our system, especially those who are uninsured, and HCMC cares for those that other systems sometimes turn away.
The fragility of our healthcare system is acute at HCMC, due in part to the high percentage of public program and high needs patients, but even more importantly, our fundamental broken reimbursement system in Minnesota. Every hospital system struggles with achieving a balanced payer mix, but HCMC has less control over this than any other system, driving massive uncompensated care costs, contributing to annual operating margin gaps of more than $190 million. Our healthcare system is in crisis, and HCMC is the tip of the spear. HCMC is at a tipping point that it might not be able to return from, and losing any hospital would put our healthcare system under incredible pressure, but closing HCMC would be a disaster to the state's entire healthcare system. HCMC is where other hospitals send patients that are unable to care for. If HCMC goes away, we will be sure to see longer wait times in emergency rooms, less access to care across the state. HCMC serves everyone, and without that safety net, our already overburdened system will continue to fail. The bill in front of you today is one proposal of how to prevent the closure of this hospital.
Hennepin County is asking the state legislature for the authority to expand and increase the ballpark tax to provide a sustainable revenue source for the hospital to address its operational needs. The hospital says it's currently facing approximately $150 million annually in operation and equipment maintenance needs, along with at least $80 million in capital investments to ensure that its facilities remain functional for patient care. With the authority to raise the ballpark tax from 0.15% to a full 1%, the anticipated revenue raised is about $337 million. The county proposes to use those revenues in the following manner: $7 million to fund for funding for the ballpark capital investment reserves, up to $24 million to support North Memorial needs to ensure their operations as another level one trauma center in the metro area, and then use the remaining resources to support Hennepin County Medical Center. This tax would be in effect until the latter of either 30 years after the last issued bonds or or the latter of the final term of the agreement between the county and the ballpark authority. So with that overview, Madam Chair, we can move over to testifiers. As I understand, there are a number of them here to talk about the importance of Hennepin County Medical Center and ensure that this hospital not only survives, but also thrives.
Thank you so much, Representative Agbaje, and thank you, Representative Nadeau. I just want to lift up that this is an unusual presentation even. I don't recall a time, in the Tax Committee at least, where I've seen a Republican and a Democrat present a bill together. And, you know, I think that your presence here and the work that you both have put in and that people on both sides of the aisle have put into really trying to take this issue seriously and think through a very complex policy question, a number of complex policy questions in front of us, speaks to the importance of the issue, the fact that, you know, this isn't a political issue, making sure that human beings in our state stay alive and have the basic things that they need is our shared work here. And so I just want to thank you both. I want to thank Chair Davids and everybody who has taken this issue seriously and dug in. It's very complex, and we have a lot to work through, but I think that we have a shared commitment to ensuring, you know, the long-term health and sustainability of HCMC, so thank you. And with that, we're going to turn to some testimony. First up, I'm kind of going to read these off in threes because there are some people who are out in the hallway. And so first up, we're hearing from Dr. Casey Ricker. We're going to hear from him on Zoom. And up next, Dr. Tom Wyatt and then Carrie Parman. Thank you. Please go ahead with your testimony, Dr. Ricker, and introduce yourself as you get started.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Thank you. Please proceed.
My name is Dr. Casey Ricker, and I'm a fourth-year general surgery resident at Hennepin Healthcare. And today I'm speaking to you from Sanford Bemidji Medical Center in Bemidji in northern Minnesota, where I'm currently piloting a rural surgery rotation. I plan to practice as a general surgeon in a small rural community. That decision didn't happen by accident. It's an intentional path that I walk, shaped by experiences growing up in a small town with an inborn fondness for agriculture. I want to serve those whose families have been feeding the world for decades by ensuring that they have continued access to the medical care that they need to continue to engage with the pursuits of agriculture. I rank Hennepin highly in the residency selection process thanks to the exceptional experiences it offers and proximity to home. I was lucky enough to match there. I knew that I needed to train at a level one trauma center to have the foundational knowledge to not only be a successful surgeon, but an irreplaceable resource to my future community. A level one trauma center is a place where I get to treat the full spectrum of surgical diseases, a vast array of traumatic injuries, as well as severe burns and frostbite, building the kind of judgment that only comes from high volume and complexity. At Hennepin, I trained in an environment where there's always backup, subspecialists, intensivists, advanced proceduralists, and layers of supporting staff. These are available not just 9 to 5, but at 1 a.m. or 2 a.m. in the morning, only a phone call or a page away. Here in Bemidji, the experience is fundamentally different. On this rotation, I'm working much closer to the front line of care, even helping to stabilize and transfer patients to HCMC. The scope is broader, the resources fewer, and the distance to help is measured in hours or miles by air. In a rural hospital, you rarely have a specialist down the hall. You are the surgeon, but also the consultant, the triage point, and sometimes the person with the most relevant experience, the closest substitute to the specialist you need. You are the difference between a patient staying in their community or being transferred hours away for definitive care. That responsibility requires a different kind of readiness and experience. The rotation is special because it bridges these two worlds. That combination of experiences is what prepares someone like me to actually go and stay in rural practice, bringing much needed care to those areas. It takes the technical skill and clinical depth that I've built over years at a high acuity urban center and applies it in a setting where adaptability, independence, and community connection matter just as much as surgical expertise. Without both experiences, the training is incomplete, and that's what makes this program unique. Hennepin Healthcare is not just training surgeons for large cities like Minneapolis, it's training surgeons for all of Minnesota. Programs like mine and partnerships like this one with Sanford Bemidji don't happen without investment. They require infrastructure, dedicated faculty, coordination, and a commitment to training physicians, not just for where they are and what they can do today, but where they're going and what's most needed from them to support their community. I'm one of those future physicians, And I can tell you this directly. This kind of training is what makes rural practice feel possible, sustainable, and meaningful. Getting patients the surgery they need in their community where they have the support of family and friends and have lived their entire lives. That's why my wife, who is also an HCMC surgery resident, and I are actively in discussions with rural hospitals in Minnesota for careers. If we want surgeons in greater Minnesota, we have to train them this way. And if we want to train them this way, we have to support the teaching hospitals that make it possible. Thank you for your time and your support of Minnesota's future healthcare workforce.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Dr. Ricker, and thank you for your work. So next is Dr. Tom Wyatt, after that Carrie Parman, and then Dr. Tom Masters. We have a lot of people who want to provide testimony today, and I'm sure that we have member discussion, so I'm asking testifiers to keep their testimony to 2 minutes or less. If I've seen you around here more than like a dozen times and you're wearing a blazer, I'm probably going to hold you to that a little more tightly, just FYI. So thank you. Please proceed. Introduce yourself as you get started, if you don't mind.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dr. Tom Wyatt, and I'm the chair of emergency medicine at Hennepin Healthcare. As was stated, we see 100,000 patients every year through our emergency department doors. I trained at Hennepin County. And like more than 85% of the faculty who now practice at Hennepin, I made a deliberate choice to stay. Hennepin Healthcare is not just a hospital, it is Minnesota's safety net. We care for anyone at any time, regardless of their circumstances. We serve as a level one trauma center for both adults and children, a regional hub for complex and critical care, and a place where the next generation of physicians is trained. Those who stay to teach are there because innovation and research are not separate from clinical care, but part of how we improve it. But I want to be very direct with you today. We are in a period of real instability. Like many health systems, we are facing significant financial pressure, but for a safety net system like ours, the margin for error is far smaller. We have already made difficult and necessary decisions to remain viable. We have closed programs that were meaningful to our patients and our staff. We have frozen approximately 100 inpatient beds due to staffing constraints, and we are operating in an environment where retaining both patients and our workforce is increasingly challenging. And importantly, we have already begun to lose people. To be accredited as a level one trauma center, you are required to provide timely access to multiple specialty services. A few examples: neurosurgery, ophthalmology, interventional radiology, and a burn center. Our system depends on a highly specialized and tightly coordinated workforce in all of these roles, so we are ready at all times for the worst day of your life. These are not interchangeable roles. They are highly trained, mission-driven individuals. Recruitment in these areas is not simple. It can take years to rebuild when significant changes happen. If we lose even one or two essential physicians or advanced practice providers, we are not just short-staffed. We risk our ability to maintain our level one trauma accreditation. It means that when the most critically injured patient, whether from Minneapolis or rural Minnesota, needs care, there's one place that is ready. Future doctors come to us from around the country, getting accepted into a residency or fellowship program, which are contractually binding, which means that if you match at a location, it's exceedingly difficult to change to another location during training. With the level of uncertainty that Hennepin Healthcare faces, we expect that we could see a decrease in applications both this year and the next year, and those effects would be felt for 3 to 8 years beyond the application cycle, as that's how long the programs are that people are entering. Residents are more nervous to commit to Hennepin Healthcare if we aren't sure if we will be here in 3, 5, or 8 years. That is why the proposal before you today is not simply about closing a budget gap. It is about creating stability in a system that the entire state relies on. It gives us the ability to retain the specialized workforce required to deliver high acuity care, the capacity to maintain our training programs that required experienced physicians to run them, and critically, we need a runway to design a more sustainable future, rather than making short-term cuts or funding band-aids that erode our long-term viability. Because without that runway, we are forced into a cycle of reactive decisions, closing services, shrinking capacity, and losing talent, each of which makes recovery harder. That is why the proposal before you, a sustainable, ongoing 1% Hennepin County sales tax, matters. I stated Hennepin because I believe in what it stands for. But belief alone does not stabilize the system or reassure our employees or bring our patients in. Sustainable funding does that. On behalf of our patients, our trainees, and the physicians and staff who have committed their careers to this mission, I urge your support for a funding strategy like the one before you today that ensures we can continue to serve not just Hennepin County, the entire state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, and thank you for your work. I'm not going to speak of after every testifier, I promise, but I just want to thank you for explaining some of the stakes, some of the importance of thinking long term, and particularly lifting up some of the incredible people who work at HCMC. The thing that you said, I stay at Hennepin because I believe in what it stands for, and I think that everybody who works at this hospital makes a conscious choice to be there and believes in what it stands for. And so, you know, we just are so lucky to have some of the most incredible professionals working there. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Up next is Carrie Parman, then Dr. Tom Masters, and then Becky Boland. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record as you get started.
Good morning, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Carrie Parman, and I live in rural Mankato area. I'm here to share how Hennepin Healthcare had a profound and lasting impact on my family. It was midnight on a Saturday just over a month ago. My entire family was at the hyperbaric facility at Hennepin Healthcare. Seven of us, including five of my grandkids, ages 8 months, 3, 4, 5, and 6 years old. We were being treated for carbon monoxide poisoning. Earlier that day, my children and their families had come together from across southern Minnesota to celebrate my granddaughter's third birthday at an indoor swimming pool when we were exposed to carbon monoxide. We realized something was wrong when my 5-year-old grandson passed out. And while waiting for the local emergency responders, my 8-month-old granddaughter began crying inconsolably. They were treated by volunteer firefighters and local EMS at the scene and transported to the local emergency room by ambulance. The entire family was seen in that emergency room, where tests revealed we all had elevated carbon monoxide levels. Five of my grandchildren, one of my sons, and myself also had elevated cardiac enzyme levels, an indication that we were at risk for long-term organ and neurologic damage. We urgently needed hyperbaric care to prevent lasting effects. Fortunately, one of the few facilities in the country offering 24/7 emergency hyperbaric care is Hennepin Healthcare. The care we needed was just a 90-minute ambulance ride away. My grandson and I were the first to arrive at the HCMC emergency room. The staff was already waiting, prepared, knowledgeable about our situation, and focused on getting us to the hyperbaric chamber as quickly as possible. As the rest of our group began to arrive, lab work and other tests were carried out swiftly and efficiently on all seven of us. In the midst of the urgency, they noticed something we hadn't even realized ourselves. We hadn't eaten in over 8 hours, not since those birthday cupcakes. Before long, everyone had a popsicle and a peanut butter sandwich in hand, a small but deeply comforting gesture in an otherwise overwhelming moment. From the moment we arrived in the HCMC emergency room and throughout our hyperbaric treatment and inpatient stay, we were surrounded by compassion, expertise, and exceptional care. They didn't just treat us, they cared for us as a family. Dr. Masters and the hyperbaric team met us in the emergency room, explained the procedure, and patiently answered all of our questions, and personally escorted us to the hyperbaric unit. They took extra time with the kids, explaining the equipment, showing them the space, and helping them feel comfortable. After monitoring our blood levels, it was determined that four of us required two additional hyperbaric treatments. Between these treatments, we were admitted for continued monitoring and care. Less than 24 hours after being admitted to HCMC, we were all able to go home. What stands out most to me is not just the advanced care we received, but how it was delivered. I've never experienced such truly family-centered care. Care that supported not just the patients, but all of us, every step of the way, with compassion and respect. My family is healthy today because that care was available when we needed it most. Thanks to Hennepin Healthcare, we avoided a tragedy. We're incredibly grateful, and I hope our story underscores how vital it is to preserve and support programs like this for families all across Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to share our story.
Thank you for sharing your story, and we're so glad that everybody's okay in your family. Thanks for being here with us. Up next is Dr. Tom Masters, then Becky Boland, and then Dr. John Gibson. Please introduce yourself as you get started. Thanks.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Dr. Thomas Masters, and I'm the medical director of Hennepin Healthcare's Center for Undersea and Hyperbaric Medicine, and an emergency room doctor as well. Hennepin Healthcare has been providing hyperbaric oxygen for patient care and research since 1964. We are one of the few institutions in the entire country providing 24/7 availability of hyperbaric oxygen for emergency patients, and the only multi-chamber hyperbaric oxygen facility in the state and region used for 24/7 emergency treatment of critically ill patients. The next closest comparable facilities that have 24/7 care are in Milwaukee or Salt Lake City. This is a specialized medical treatment during which patients breathe 100% oxygen inside a room that can be pressurized, which allows us to increase the oxygen concentration in patients' tissues. Our chambers are large enough for 8 patients to receive treatment simultaneously in one room and to care for patients who are in critical condition, on a bed, or need to be connected to an IV. Hyperbaric oxygen helps effectively treat burns, certain types of life and limb-threatening infections, carbon monoxide poisoning, frostbite, and eye strokes. We also provide non-emergent care for radiation injury and non-healing wounds resulting from diabetes, and are one of the busiest chambers in the country, delivering about 5,000 of these specialized treatments annually. We care for several hundred patients each year. In 2025, about 60% of the patients that we saw were from outside of Hennepin County. Our highly skilled staff are certified hyperbaric technicians and nurses. Our physicians are board certified in emergency medicine and subspecialty certified in undersea and hyperbaric medicine. I myself came to Hennepin Healthcare for my fellowship training in undersea and hyperbaric medicine. I remember being in awe of the chamber and would invite you all to come see it for yourselves. It's still as impressive to me now as it was 12 years ago. When Carrie's family came in, it had already been a busy Saturday, having treated several patients, including a critical patient with a life-threatening infection. I got a call from a hospital in Greater Minnesota about a mass carbon monoxide incident in their emergency department. Incidents involving this many patients are uncommon, especially with children, but my mind immediately went to the mass casualty training scenario our simulation center had worked with us a few months prior and thought, we're ready for this. I mobilized our team and coordinated with my ED and pediatric colleagues to prepare for the family's arrival and get them to the chamber as fast as possible, as timely treatment is critical in preventing long-term brain damage from carbon monoxide poisoning. When everyone arrived, the ED had already devoted several adjoining rooms to their care so the family could be together. From there, we quickly got everyone over to the chamber and safely treated. I know their special birthday didn't end like they would have wanted, but I hope they experienced world-class care we aim to deliver with compassion and dedication. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much for being with us. Thank you for your work. Becky Boland, and then Dr. John Gibson, and then Trevor Sawalish is next. Welcome to the committee. Thanks for being with us. Please introduce yourself as you get started.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Chair Davids. My name is Becky Boland. I am testifying in support of House File 4841 because without the expertise of Hennepin Healthcare, my now 16-year-old daughter and I would not be alive. As an older teenager growing up in southeastern Minnesota, I was devastated to be told by my doctor at 16 that I would never be able to have children. Upon moving to Minneapolis, I heard repeatedly about the phenomenal care for women at Hennepin Healthcare and chose Dr. Virginia Lupo, Nurse Barb, and their team for my health care. When I became unexpectedly, by miracle, pregnant at 29, their focus turned to keeping me safe amidst many complications. After I was hospitalized for a third time in the first couple weeks of knowing I was pregnant, together we developed a different care plan involving weekly appointments, a PIC line, and a lot of medication. Seeing your care team weekly allows for not only great care as a patient, but the joy of knowing them beyond skilled providers. That's when the holy work of neighboring begins. At 18 weeks, I was diagnosed with a condition associated with trisomy 21, Down syndrome, cystic fibrosis, infections, fetal growth restriction, and amniotic bleeding. I still vividly remember the expertise and warmth of the nurses and doctors as we adjusted our care plan yet again. One weekly appointment after hearing my daughter's heartbeat, Dr. Lupo turned to me and calmly told me I could tell anybody I was pregnant because we were going to deliver this baby. And if any of you have heard Dr. Virginia Lupo speak to you, you know her calm voice, full of authority, and knowledge is to believe. And that is when I was able to relax and realize that my dream was going to come true. After my scheduled and planned delivery did not go as expected, after 23 hours of labor, the medical team that I had had the opportunity to get to know on a first-name basis was there with every single problem. Every time my daughter's heartbeat stopped during delivery, or my body did not respond to medication or progress. Finally, my miracle of a baby girl was born and off to the NICU. Again, Dr. Lupo's care turned to me, while she taught the next generation of residents how to be caring and supportive doctors with expertise and stitched up my level 3 tears. I named my daughter Elsa Lavon after my grandmother Lavon, the most stubborn, courageous, and welcoming person that I knew. I am now the proud parent of a fierce, strong-willed, and incredibly independent 16-year-old who teaches me more than I thought possible. And yes, she reminds me of my grandmother every single day. My daughter and I are both alive thanks to Hennepin Healthcare, and I owe the astounding joy and privilege of being Elsa's mom to the phenomenal skill, expertise, and passion from the team members who followed their calling into medicine at Hennepin Healthcare, a regional and statewide resource for exceptional medical care. Thank you.
Thank you very much for being here, and thanks for sharing you and Elsa's story with us today.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. All right, Dr. John Gibson, up next Trevor Sawalish, and then Dave St. Peter. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself as you get started.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to write testimony to the importance of a level 1 trauma center, North Memorial, and its naming in this bill. My name is John Gibson. I'm a trauma surgeon, and I've had the pleasure and the privilege of serving as the medical director of trauma at North Memorial for the last 20 years. Minnesota's trauma system is a well-coordinated system, a statewide network designed to ensure that every resident, regardless of geography, has access to life-saving care in the most critical moments. At the center of the system are very few, limited number of level 1 trauma centers, of which North Memorial is one. Why is that important? You've heard from Dr. Wright and Hennepin earlier. To have a level 1 trauma center, you must have the commitment of the medical staff. You must have specialists that are on call 24/7, 365 days a year, trauma surgeons, neurosurgeons, emergency department. You have to have access to advanced interventional radiology, MRI, CT scan, a blood bank. It's a tremendous amount of resources. And these resources take years and even decades to build up. Robbinsdale Level 1 Trauma Center plays a unique and important role, not only in the Twin Cities, but also across the metro, and also across the state and the region. Each year, we take care of over 3,000 trauma patients. Over the past 5 years, 15,000 trauma patients. Now, while two-thirds of those are Hennepin County residents, a third of those patients are coming from rural and regional hospitals that refer patients in for care. Over the past 5 years, 124 hospitals have sent us patients to take care of. These patients are transferred from rural and regional hospitals because they don't have the ability to take care of these patients to the level that the patients deserve. Just this past Monday night, I was on call. What do these patients look like? I got two patients from rural centers. One was a young man working on his ATV, working on the clutch. There was an explosion. Shrapnel went into his face, piercing his cheek, breaking his nose, breaking his jaw, breaking his orbit, which is the floor of the eye socket. He needed emergency care. He needed to be treated. Need to go to the operating room, so I coordinated that care with our oral and plastic surgeons. Later that night, a young woman in her 20s had her arm slashed with a chef knife, taking out tendons and a nerve and artery. She needed to go to the operating room with plastic surgery so she could maintain the ability to use her hand. This is just a quiet Monday night at a level 1 trauma center. Now, it's true, of the 15,000 patients that we took care of in the last 5 years that were admitted for trauma, a lot of them are the ones you think about, the gunshot wounds. Over 1,600 were gunshot wounds, a couple hundred stabbings, but 89% are not that. They're average Minnesotans that hail from your communities. There are falls from standing. There's falls off ladders, falls off the roofs, car crashes, bike crashes, athletic accidents. What do those patients look like? One recent save that's, I think, can only happen at a level 1 trauma center, or at least a highly functioning trauma center, is a call we got recently of a woman in a car crash. She's hypotensive. Her blood pressure is low. Her heart's racing. She comes into the trauma bay. She's in obvious shock. Within 7 minutes, she's getting blood. Within 15 minutes, we realize she's pregnant. The uterus is ruptured. Her and the baby are at risk of dying. She's in the operating room with a trauma surgeon and obstetrics gynecology, and both lives are saved. That does not happen outside of a level one trauma center, or if it does, it's very rare. It's a tremendous amount of resources that we have to garner to take care of these patients. It's a tremendous amount of effort to build these systems up, and we appreciate your support to continue to do that.
Thank you so much. We appreciate you being with us, and thank you for your work. Up next, Trevor Swalish, then Dave St. Peter, and Dan McConnell on deck. Welcome back to the committee. Please introduce yourself. So
you can start. Thank you, Madam Chair. And thanks to the committee. I am Trevor Swalish, and I have the privilege of serving the CEO of North Memorial Health. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify. Being one of the beblazered frequent flyers, I will keep it brief. But I do welcome the opportunity to tell about the great work and how important this is, not only for HCMC, but for North Memorial as the other level one trauma center in Hennepin County. As I previously shared, the financial pressures that face North Memorial are persistent, cumulative, and projected to intensify in the next several years. While we previously have been focused on the uncompensated care part of the equation, we did provide to the committee additional information on that topic because it's important to recognize that we can't just look at a single metric to determine what services we're going to be able to preserve and sustain for our communities. It's very challenging to look at all these different reports and get an apples-to-apples comparison when healthcare is as complex as it is, so we welcome questions and follow-up to that additional information. Over the past several years as well, I want to make sure it's clear that we are working very, very hard to solve our own issues. We take steps every single month to improve our efficiency and make sure that we are using every dollar that comes into our system as efficiently as possible, not because we are worried about efficiency, but because we are worried about sustaining services and making sure that we can keep healthcare costs affordable. However, over the last several years, the costs continue to outpace any revenue gains that we have. These include rising pharmaceutical costs, labor costs, medical supplies, equipment, health insurance, our own health insurance, and compliance requirements, all of which have far outstripped the pace of any reimbursement, especially when 75% of the patients that walk through our door are on government programs. The increases in those programs are not anywhere near keeping pace. Despite the headwinds, we continue to use data-driven strategies to improve our operation and to make sure that we are keeping healthcare affordable, but there are true limits to what we're going to be able to do given the headwinds that we're facing. Hospitals like North, Robbinsdale Hospital, along with Hennepin County Medical Center, serve a unique and essential role. As providers of level one trauma and safety net services, we provide disproportionate share for those that are uninsured, underinsured, and also covered by government programs, and this mission is fundamental to the healthcare system in all of Minnesota. That's why this legislation and this partnership is so incredibly important with the legislature and working with our level one trauma centers because we truly need these services available for our community. We're very grateful to Representative Abaje and Nadeau for recognizing the importance of systems like ours and for advancing this conversation. We're also continue to be grateful for our partnership with Hennepin County in recognizing North's partnership with HCMC in serving this critical need. We do have some, obviously, adjustments or suggestions for how to make the legislation a little less complex as it's written right now. We have concerns over what we'd be able to predict in terms of revenues that we'd be able to plan on for North Memorial, but we continue to work through partnership with the authors in Hennepin County. Last thing that I would leave with you is two thoughts. First, HCMC and Robbinsdale Hospital are real lifelines for real Minnesotans. Families who need emergency care, seniors managing chronic illness, patients who don't have the luxury of waiting or traveling further, we are here for them. That's why public funding and support matters and why we recognize the strain on all of the hospitals in Minnesota. We also want to say that we cannot rely on taxpayer dollars alone. We have to continue as an organization to do everything we can to run more efficiently. And we have to expect that all healthcare organizations in the state of Minnesota should be working hard to find efficiencies and to improve their operations to keep care affordable for all that we serve. I'll thank the committee again for the opportunity to testify and welcome any questions.
Thank you so much for your testimony. All right, up next, Dave St. Peter, then Dan McConnell, and after that, Bart Anderson. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself as you get started with your testimony.
Madam Chair and members, good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to be here today. I'm Dave St. Peter, and I've worked for the Minnesota Twins for 36 years. One of the highlights of my career was contributing to the formation of a model public-private partnership between the Twins and Hennepin County. In 2005, Hennepin and the Twins forged an innovative partnership to build a boutique ballpark in downtown Minneapolis and preserve Major League Baseball for the next generation of fans, all of which without any state money. Since opening in 2010, Target Field has earned its reputation as one of the best ballparks in baseball and was recognized as the best stadium experience in North America. Over the past 16 years, Target Field has attracted more than 35 million visitors, more than any other Minneapolis venue. All year long, Target Field brings our community together. In addition to being the home of the Twins, the ballpark has earned accolades as the region's premier outdoor concert venue, for being the greenest ballpark in America, and for being among the most multimodal, transit-oriented stadiums in the country. Over the years, the team has made significant investments to deliver increased accessibility, streamlined security, technology upgrades, and multiple fan-first enhancements. Since the ballpark's opening, the Twins have fully accepted responsibility for keeping Target Field a state-of-the-art facility, paying 97% of all operating and capital expenses to maintain Target Field as a world-class venue. As Target Field enters its 17th season, the ballpark will require additional investment aimed at ensuring the facility remains among the best in sport. Headlining those areas of focus will be building systems, fan amenities, baseball operations, and public infrastructure. In 2023, Hennepin County approached the Twins with an interest in exploring the repurposing of the original ballpark tax, as well as an extension of the county team partnership. The Twins engaged with the county and ultimately developed a blueprint for the future. While the legislative efforts proved unsuccessful in 2024 and 2025, the Twins remain in lockstep with Hennepin County. The team supports the county's vision for repurposing the ballpark tax, recognizing it meets a number of key objectives. First and foremost, as you've heard here today, providing critical funding to HCMC and the healthcare needs across the county. But it also will maintain Hennepin's funding of youth activities and library hours, which was a staple of the original legislation.
Mr. St. Peter, we're a little over 2 minutes. Please wrap up. Thank you.
Okay. In addition, it will ensure adequate public-private partnership in a continued investment in the county-owned Target Field. I thank you for the opportunity to be here today and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much for being with us. If anybody has questions about the lineup or investment in the team, they can take it up with Mr. St. Peter during discussion. Dan McConnell, welcome to the committee. Bart Anderson, and then Jeremy Olson Ehlert. Please introduce yourself as you get started.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Co-Chair Davids, and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. For the record, my name is Dan McConnell, and I serve as the president of the Minnesota Building and Construction Trades Council. I also volunteer with the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office. It is in that volunteer role that I most recently had firsthand experience with the importance of Hennepin County Medical Center. While assisting in the Sheriff's Office last September, I received an accidental needle stick and sought treatment at the emergency department of HCMC. I underwent testing for hepatitis and HIV and began a course of prophylactic treatments. On paper, that might sound routine, but when you're faced with the possibility of a chronic, potentially life-altering disease, it's anything but routine. The team at HCMC was exceptional. Their professionalism, compassion, and expertise gave me and my family real peace of mind during what was a very stressful period. I'm grateful to say my results ultimately came back clear, but it's an experience that certainly has stayed with me. As president of the Minnesota Building Trades, I have the privilege of representing 16 members who work at HCMC, maintaining their facilities infrastructure. As we know, it's a 24/7, 365-day-a-year operation that quite literally cannot fail. And while my members that work there are few in number, their work is critical because HCMC's role in our community is critical. And it goes far beyond just those 16 members. The other 77,000 members of the Minnesota Building Trades rely on HCMC. When a member is injured on a construction site, those injuries are oftentimes severe. Recently, following a structural collapse, an injured member was rescued and transported to HCMC because they are the level one trauma center. When workers suffer severe burns, something we train for every day to prevent what we know can happen, we rely on the state's premier burn unit, housed at HCMC. As an electrician by trade, I can tell you arc flashes and electrical explosions are real risks and the subjects of many nightmares. We train for and emphasize safe work practices, but when things go wrong, access to that level of care is the difference between recovery and something far worse. House File 4841 recognizes the unique and essential role that HCMC plays, not just for Minneapolis, but for our entire state. This is about ensuring that when the worst happens, the best care is there. It's about supporting the backbone of our emergency and trauma systems, and it's about making sure institutions like HCMC remain strong, stable, and ready to serve our citizens. For all these reasons, we strongly support
House File
4841 and urge its passage. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. I don't mean to be so mean to the Blazard people.
It's the first time I've ever gone over, I promise you.
Bart Anderson, then Jeremy Olson-Ehlert, and then Reverend Doug Mork. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Not Bart Anderson, pinch hitting.
Oh, you're not. I'm indeed. Sorry.
That's okay. My name is Ethan Vogel, a legislative director with AFSCME Council 5. AFSCME is a public and private sector labor union. We represent 43,000 workers all across the state of Minnesota, including more than 2,000 workers across the Hennepin healthcare system. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and thank you for your work on this issue. I'd like to express AFSCME's unwavering support for House File 4841, or any proposal the legislature can agree on to invest in Hennepin healthcare in a way that recognizes HHS for what it is, a statewide and regional public good, a healthcare asset that improves the quality of life for all Minnesotans. It's no secret that our healthcare system is designed in such a way that allows a lot of entities and individuals to make a lot of money. Insurance companies, big pharma, med tech, specialty providers, and good for them. Hooray for capitalism and the contributions that they make with their expertise and their innovation that strengthen healthcare in our state. But we should remember the original intent and purpose of our healthcare and social safety net systems is not profitability. The purpose is to help people, to protect the vulnerable and the marginalized. And it is something that, across our faith traditions, is considered the greatest virtue of a society. It is what makes our communities stronger. It improves the quality of life for all. And that is what Hennepin Health does. And it's worth investing in. It's worth investing in because on the worst day of any one of our lives, it could be the workers at HCMC that save our lives or save the life of a loved one. So, Madam Chair, in conclusion, in the weeks ahead, we ask the legislature to focus on this issue with particular urgency to reach an agreeable solution that recognizes HHS as the statewide and regional asset that it is. Thank you for your time, your consideration, and in advance for your work ahead.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Jeremy Olson-Ehlert, welcome to the committee. Reverend Doug Mork, and then Eric Harris-Bernstein, you're on deck. Please introduce yourself as you get started.
Good morning, Chair Gomez, Chair Davids, and member of the committee. My name is Jeremy Olson-Ehlert. I'm a registered nurse at Hennepin County Medical Center, and I'm the second vice president of the Minnesota Nurses Association. Over 1,700 of my fellow MNA members call HCMC their workplace. I'm here to testify in support of House File 4841, but more importantly, in support of a sustainable solution to fund Hennepin County Medical Center. Committee members, I want to start with something just simple. HCMC is not just a level one adult and pediatric trauma center. It's where Minnesotans go when everything else has failed. When a patient is uninsured, when they are in crisis, when no other system will catch them. HCMC is the safety net. As nurses, we don't just talk about this in theory, we see it. We see the patient who had to wait because they had nowhere else to go. We see the transfer that comes in because the case is too complex, too costly, or too hard. We see what happens when the system turns patients away. If HCMC is shuttered, patients will wait significantly longer in emergency rooms across the metro, and hospitals in greater Minnesota will lose the partner that they rely on to take cases that they can't. Let's be real, there is no backup plan for any of these patients. There is no extra capacity, not in the metro and not anywhere else in Minnesota. HCMC is Minnesota's safety net. We are grateful for the careful attention to this issue by Representative Egbaje and Rep. Nadeau, Chair Gomez and Chair Davids, and your commitment to something sustainable. You can add M&A to the long list of groups who do not want to be back here again next year having the same conversation about a long-term solution simply because one-time funding was easier to get done. Kicking the can down the road creates immense uncertainty, and for a hospital that already pays its bedside nurses less than in private hospitals, one-time funding will not provide workers much certainty or confidence, which will undoubtedly have a significant impact on worker retention and recruitment. We hope that you will all include workers in the discussions as the language of the bill ultimately takes shape. My union has been particularly involved in discussions here at the legislature for a long time, not just about funding, but also about hospital governance. And our members care a lot about what happens to the hospital that we love. Rep. Egbaje, Nadeau, thank you for all your hard work on this bill. And thank you again, Co-Chair Davids and Gomez, for the work on this issue. And thank you again, Madam Chair, which I also mean as thanks for introducing House File 4849 this week as well, which M&A also supports. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much for being with us, and thank you for your work. Rep. Egbaje, do you remember how many employees work at HCMC?
How many what?
How many people work at HCMC?
I don't have that number.
I think it's like 6,500 to 7,000. 7,000?
7,000.
Yeah, 7,000 people, largest employer in downtown Minneapolis. So thank you for bringing the workers' perspective into this. All right, welcome to the committee, Reverend Doug Mork, Eric Harris-Bernstein, followed by Sam Erickson. Please introduce yourself as you get started.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. My name is Doug Mork. I am one of the pastors at Holy Trinity Lutheran Church in the Longfellow neighborhood of South Minneapolis. I've served congregations in the Twin Cities for the last 30 years, the last 15 in Minneapolis or near suburbs. Perhaps the most widely shared tenet of my Christian faith, shared across so many traditions, is this call to serve the sick and the suffering, and to pay particular attention and work. From some of our most ancient scriptures, through the prophets, to the words and deeds of Jesus, consistently what we see is this preferential exercise of energy on behalf of those who are sick or suffering, particularly those who are marginalized and don't have the access they should. Christians have understood their deepest calling to love God and love neighbor, and not in the abstract, but very specifically in the work of caring for those who are sick, right? Think of all the hospitals across this metro area and across the country whose original names or whose beginnings can be traced back to communities of faith, organizing neighbors, connecting with counties and cities to build those hospitals. Many of them still hold those names. It's simply a core value across the tradition. For the last 15 years serving in Minneapolis, serving first as senior pastor at Cross of Glory and Brooklyn Center and now in the Longfellow neighborhood, I've spent a lot of hours at Hennepin County, and many of our members have been there. It has been a core place to caring for our communities. It is the kind of that safety net that folks know and trust and lean into time and again, both for, again, core members of congregations, as well as neighbors, right, as well as the neighbors that I interact with every day in our programs in Longfellow, at Holy Trinity, did at Cross of Glory and Brooklyn Center, folks who really are on the margins and are looking for help when they most need it, when their lives can be changed in a heartbeat. As I think of even just the last couple of years at Holy Trinity, I've had members, in one case neurological, in a couple of cases related to cardio, in one case a member who was fine at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and by 5 was in a coma and wound up in 30 days of care at Hennepin County, unexplained disorders connected to other unexplained disorders, many moments along the way when, frankly, the outlook was not very good. That's a patient who went home and who was able again to resume life. And again, we see that care. We strongly support, and I think you could pull in my colleagues all across the faith community. We support this work. We support the effort to fund it in a stable way. We see it as part of our faith calling. Thank you.
Thank you very much for being with us, Reverend Mork. Up next, Eric Harris-Bernstein, and then Sam Erickson and Dr. Abhishek Fatigutla. Welcome Chair, to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Chair Gomez, members of the committee, my name is Eric Bernstein, and I'm the director of We Make Minnesota, which is a labor grassroots coalition working on state tax and budget issues. I'm grateful to be here to share our support for HF 4841 and the essential importance of HCMC. Today we are hearing many compelling arguments about the importance of this hospital and the services it provides, so I'll focus my comments more around the dynamics of paying for it. Our coalition often supports policies that raise state revenue, whether they're income taxes, sales taxes, or wealth taxes. These policies have their merits and trade-offs, which often become the focus of much debate in this chamber. Our coalition cares about these nuances. We care about the distribution and administration, and we even care about the economic vibrance of our state and how it's impacted by the tax code. But the true core of our coalition's message is not that we need to tax the rich or modernize the sales tax. The true core of our coalition's message is that we need these things that taxes pay for. We need roads, we need schools, and we need hospitals. And while we can debate the appropriate funding levels, and other details, none of us can deny that we depend in direct and indirect ways on these collective resources to survive. I wanted to ground my comments in that, in this basic reality, because HCMC is something that we cannot go without. We need HCMC, you need HCMC, your constituents and your local governments need HCMC. And therefore, we must agree that we need a funding mechanism to keep it from closing. And we must not let disagreements about ideal source of funding get in the way of a solution. The local sales tax has many merits. It will provide stable revenue, and it will be shared by many visitors to Hennepin County, much more so than a property tax would. You could say that it strikes a nice balance in that way. So while we can always debate details, these concerns about tax policy pale in comparison to the horrors and long-term damage that will be done if we lose this hospital or if it is deprived of the investments that it needs to thrive. Every day of uncertainty at HCMC is a day that we lose staff, institutional knowledge, and organizational cohesion. This is damage that a patchwork of one-time money and fiscal life support cannot prevent. The professionals of this essential hospital deserve stability and a high-functioning facility.
Please wrap up your comments, Mr. Bernstein.
Anything that we do that does not meet the standard risks the unthinkable, so I just want to close out by saying no tax is perfect, but the most important thing about taxes is the stuff they pay for, and we must pay to protect HCMC so it can keep protecting us. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us. Up next, Sam Erickson, Dr. Abhishek Fatigutla, and then Dr. Lexi Kint. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself as you get started.
Chair Davids, Chair Gomez, and members of the committee, my name is Sam Erickson. I'm the Vice President for the Hennepin County Association of Paramedics and EMTs. We're the union that represents paramedics, EMTs, 911 dispatchers at Hennepin EMS. And so I want to come here today to not only say that we support this bill, but that our EMS system and HCMC is the backstop of the metro region, the state, and the Midwest generally. I want to talk a little bit about our members in particular, as others have done a great job of talking about the services at HCMC and other things. So our members provide 911 service all the way from the city of Minneapolis to the shores of Lake Minnetonka, and we've done that on a number of days that were heart-wrenching. So that includes the 35W bridge collapse. It includes the terrible shooting at Annunciation School. And it includes the time following the murder of George Floyd, where civil unrest tore through the city of Minneapolis and other areas. So we know what's at stake, and we know how important it is that not only our ambulance service, our dispatch center, our doctors and nurses in the ER and all the support staff, we need to find a solution to this crisis, and we need to do that now. So I won't waste any more of your time. I'll just close by saying we support this bill, but realistically, we support any solution, including House File 4849 or any other creative solution that supports patients, our members, and the community writ large. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for being with us. Thank you so much for your work. Dr. Abhishek Fatigutla, and then Dr. Lexi Kint, and after that is Laura Sales. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself as you get started.
Hi, my name is Dr. Abhishek Fatigutla. I'm a family medicine resident at HCMC and a member of CIR. I work primarily at the Whittier Clinic as well as in the hospital, and I'm here today because the current funding crisis is directly compromising our ability to provide care. In family medicine, our mission is prevention. However, the current budget crisis is undermining this foundation. We're losing essential ancillary staff, social workers, medical assistants, and care coordinators who provide the vital infrastructure for our most complex patients. With the remaining staff facing reduced hours, a growing barrier stands between my patients and the care that they need. Without the support, access to care is severed. For example, HCMC's uncompensated care plan allows many of my patients to afford basic medications like insulin. A $20 insulin refill today prevents a $20,000 ICU stay in a month. When we lose the funding that supports these programs and the staff that run them, we aren't saving money. We're simply trading low-cost management today for high-cost crises tomorrow. These patients don't just disappear. They go to the emergency department. Our ED is already paralyzed by a boarding crisis where patients wait in hallways for days because no beds are available. Treating primary care in the ED delays care for every Minnesotan facing a stroke, heart attack, or car accident. We cannot treat the ED like a primary care clinic and expect it to function for true emergencies. Repurposing the ballpark tax is an opportunity for a proactive investment in the health of Minnesota rather than being reactive. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your work, Dr. Thati Kupla. Appreciate your testimony. Dr. Lexi Kint, and then Laura Sales, followed by Tina Santos.
Good morning, and thank you for taking the time to meet with us today. I'm Dr. Lexi Kint. I'm a fifth-year general surgery resident at Hennepin County Medical Center and a member of CIR. The residents of HCMC and the staff who train us take great pride in the work that we do and in being a safety net hospital. Many of the patients that we care for have nowhere else to go to receive care. In my department and many of the others in the hospital, the staff who train us also receive their training at HCMC. They stay because they believe in the hospital's mission and truly care for and dedicate their lives to this population. This value is passed down to the residents. As surgery residents, we spend a significant amount of time caring for trauma and burn patients. HCMC was Minnesota's first level one trauma center, and we remain the busiest. Our burn center is also one of the busiest in the nation. HCMC's trauma program performs highly in the nation's trauma quality and outcomes through the American College of Surgeons Trauma Quality Improvement Program, and our burn program is among the best in the nation. Our burn center treats an average of 12 inpatients per day and over 20 per day in the clinic. Patients are transferred from all over the state and even other states for our care. Last year, we had over 4,000 admissions for burn and trauma. This number does not include the trauma and burn patients who are able to discharge from the emergency department to be seen in our clinics. Over 50% of our trauma patients are covered by Medicare and Medicaid. Due to budget cuts and attempts to save our hospital, there have already been significant changes in our ability to care for patients, and we have not even started our busiest season, which is trauma season. With bed cuts and operating room cuts, operations are being delayed longer than necessary. Patients are boarding in the emergency department longer than necessary due to lack of bed availability. This is only going to get worse. Without your help, HCMC will shut down and the patients we serve will be dispersed to the hospitals across the city that are already frequently at capacity. The infrastructure and personnel is not prepared or in place for this. Any delay will lead to further cuts, reducing our capacity to care for our patients, impacting our public health. Hennepin must be protected to continue providing appropriate care for our community. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Dr. Kent, for being with us, and thank you for your work. Up next, Laura Sales, then Tina Santos, and Dan Collison. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself as you get started.
Hi, everyone. My name is Laura Sales, and I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Attorney General's Office. AG Ellison's schedule does not allow him to be here today, so I'm reading this short statement on his behalf. Chair Gomez, Chair Davids, and members, thank you for hearing House File 4841, and thank you to Representative Agbaje as chief author and Representative Nadeau for signing on as a co-author. The physicians, nurses, health professionals, and staff at Hennepin County provide nationally leading services to our state. I want to begin my remarks by thanking them. I join my voice with those who stress the importance of Hennepin County Medical Center as a statewide asset. Its name should not disguise the fact that one-third of admissions to HCMC come from outside Hennepin County, or that HCMC provides critical trauma services that serve the whole state and upper Midwest. Let me say clearly, closing HCMC is not an option for Minnesota and cannot be an option. Every hospital in Minnesota benefits from HCMC because, as a safety net hospital, HCMC cares for patients that other hospitals don't have the expertise to care for. HCMC also relieves financial pressure off all other health systems in Minnesota because it treats everyone, regardless of ability to pay. When I toured HCMC this week, one doctor said to me that the university medical school can't do what it does without HCMC because 50% of University of Minnesota medical students, residents, and fellows train at HCMC. This means that every community in Minnesota is served by a physician that trained at HCMC. We are here because HCMC's finances are the victim of a perfect storm, largely beyond its control or its ability to solve on its own. It stands to lose $1.7 billion over the next 10 years from federal cuts to the Affordable Care Act and Medicare, not to mention losses from UCare. For a hospital that already provides $100 million in uncompensated care a year, this is unsustainable. So we must act. One of the most important reasons we must act is to retain the extraordinary staff that provide and support care at this indispensable facility. We need a whole-of-community approach, not only to save HCMC, but to strengthen it. Hennepin County leaders have a central role to play, but other health systems, business leaders, researchers, labor unions, and above all, patients and staff must also be engaged. My office and I intend to be part of the solution as well. The legislature also has a critical role to play, and House File 4841 is a good start. I thank the authors again for their bipartisan work in bringing this bill forward, and I look forward to working with all parties to find a solution that will bring stability to this important institution, the people who work there, and the people who receive care there. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. We appreciate Attorney General Ellison's attention to this. Tina Santos and then Dan Collison is on deck. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself as you get started.
Hi, good morning, Chair Gomez and members of the committee. Thanks for letting me speak today. My name is Cristina Santos. I am a volunteer at Unidos Minnesota Healthcare Committee. I live in Minneapolis, and I'm a pediatric and emergency room nurse for almost 20 years now. I support the expansion of the Hennepin County ballpark tax because it shows how public financing can be leveraged to advance the common good, particularly when those investments are structured to protect the health and well-being of all Minnesotans. And I want to name who all of those Minnesotans are. As a level one adult trauma center centrally located in Minneapolis, the hospital is a well-oiled machine when it comes to responding to any trauma emergency in the city. But lesser known are the trauma services provided to greater Minnesota. Think of the farmer who falls from their tractor, or the snowmobiler who collides with a tree, a child who rolls over their ATV, or the lake goers in a boating accident. These are not downtown Minneapolis emergencies. The whole state needs and uses the expertise of HCMC's trauma program. As a burn center, people of all ages come to Hennepin to receive life-saving and rehabilitative care so that they can reintegrate into their communities. And their service area extends beyond Minnesota. So the loss of this hospital would fragment access to burn care for Minnesotans and folks across the Midwest. Lastly, I speak to you as a mother of school-aged children when highlighting the importance of a pediatric level one trauma center. The hospital we desperately leaned on that random Wednesday morning in August of 2025, when HCMC stepped up to the plate to minimize fatalities from the Annunciation school shooting. They were and are ready to respond on a parent's darkest day to any trauma involving a pediatric patient, and multiple ones at that. This hospital gives children a fighting chance to return home. HCMC is a community anchor, performing miracles every day for urban and rural Minnesotans. Supporting the expanded tax proposal reflects a broader principle of many who work in healthcare and by those that need it, that public dollars ought to be deployed in ways that generate widespread benefit, not just private gain. Should we,
everyone in this room ever need it, I pray that Hennepin and their dedicated healthcare workers are around to give us, everyone in this room, the best chance at a miracle. Please support HF 4841. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony, and thank you for your work. We appreciate you being with us today. Up next, Dan Collison. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself. Get started.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dan Collison. I am the Senior Director of Business Development and Public Affairs for Sherman Associates. I'm here to testify in support of HF 4841 and to thank Representatives Bagje and Nadeau for the growing bipartisan support behind this critically important legislation for the public good of the state of Minnesota. Speaking personally, Hennepin Healthcare has cared for my family and has been my primary healthcare provider for nearly 15 years. I have served on the Hennepin Healthcare Community Advisory Board for 7 years, and I currently serve alongside Chris Sherman, President of Sherman Associates, on the Hennepin Healthcare Foundation Board of Directors. Prior to joining Sherman Associates, I was Senior Minister of First Covenant Church in Minneapolis, located in the heart of the downtown Hennepin Healthcare Hospital campus. And I worked bivocationally as the Director of Downtown Partnerships for the Minneapolis Downtown Council, including a public-private partnership around the ballpark and the ballpark authority's interests on behalf of the public investment for that area of downtown. And during that time, even to today, I see the scope and necessity of this healthcare system. I see helicopters arriving, bringing patients from across greater Minnesota to the leading level one adult and pediatric trauma center, including burn victims, for whom Sherman Associates helped build a nonprofit center with the Firefighters for Healing, who provide care for families and children impacted by burns. I see ambulances arriving constantly, and as mentioned previously in today's testimony, the EMS operations headquartered downtown responds to 14 communities and 266 square miles. I see families and children from across the state receiving care ranging from major surgery and rare disease treatment to inpatient psychiatric services and addiction medicine. And finally, I see people seeking care regardless of circumstance, those who are housing stable, those at risk, and those walking from shelters or from the street or the shelter that First Covenant Church started 16 years ago and operates today with partners. I also see the 7,000 employees that make that care possible, the largest workforce in downtown Minneapolis, paramedics, nurses, physicians, trainees, therapists, interpreters, and first responders, that 24-hour, 7-day-a-week campus with thousands of people moving through its 8-block footprint every day sustains surrounding businesses and strengthens downtown safety and stability. Now, working with Sherman Associates, the company I represent, who owns and operates particularly affordable housing, 65% of our apartments are income qualified for seniors, working families, and special people with special needs, but across the state as well, including Duluth and Rochester. And I share that because I travel to those cities and speak to executives of other systems, healthcare systems, and time again, where we talk about housing and what do you need, we also talk about the system. And they describe Hennepin Healthcare as uniquely essential to the statewide healthcare infrastructure, not replaceable by any other system. And then finally, downtown, the Hennepin Healthcare campus spans more than 4 million square feet, including buildings that are nearly a century old. It's a 400-plus bed hospital supported by a vast ambulatory and specialty network, serves hundreds of thousands of patients, so sustaining this accreditation, safety, and modern care requires sustained capital investment. If this system were to falter, if this campus were to close, potentially as soon as June, the impact would be catastrophic, not only for the patients across Minnesota, but for the state's largest employment center that is a critical part of the tax base that supports the state's budget. HF 4841 and all those that we're considering seek to provide a responsible long-term solution to ensure the Minnesota Ballpark Authority has resources to maintain their investments and economic goals related to tax base and the public good. And this tax bill enables phased capital investment so Hennepin Healthcare can continue doing what it has done since 1887. It shows up every day for everyone who needs care. Thank you for hearing my comments and being here today.
Thank you for your testimony. That concludes the folks who signed up to testify. Is there anyone else present who wishes to testify before we move to member discussion? All right, I'm not seeing anybody step up. We'll move then to member discussion. I think like half of Hennepin County is over there, so if anybody has any specific questions, I'm sure that there are people in the room who can help us out. All right. First, Representative Swedzinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would maybe like to talk to either, it could be the authors of the bill or folks from Hennepin County kind of about some language in the bill. But my main question is from 3.31 to 4.2, those lines, it says other purposes related to county public health services or priorities and other county identified services or programs, including low barrier housing and address health related needs. You know, just kind of generally reading that section, it appears that you know, it's creating a pretty wide space for the county on what they could potentially spend money on, not just hospital. Like, you know, we've heard a lot from emergency services. We heard a lot about burn victims and the hyperbaric chambers. But it appears that that particular space in the bill allows for quite a wide space for the county to spend money. Is that a correct reading, or how could the county or the authors talk to that?
Sounds like we'll go to Representative Agbaje. Also, I just saw the county administrator approaching, so happy to hear from them also. It's up to the authors. Representative Agbaje.
Sure. I'll start, and then we can turn it over to the county administrators. But I would just say that this bill is a first draft, and so we will be updating the language, and we'll be tightening the language in a lot of places. I think from original discussions, this probably came up because there were conversations before the dire needs of HCMC were known about other uses when it was still at 0.15. And so I think for now, as we're moving it, or as we're considering moving it to a 1% sales tax, we will want to tighten it to make sure that it's focused heavily on Hennepin County Medical Center.
Should we go to the administrator?
Yeah,
or do you
that'd be great. Yeah,
yeah.
Thank
you. Okay. Please introduce yourself for the record before you get started.
Madam Chair. Chair David, Jody Wentland, County Administrator, Representative Sadowski. Part of our program and our model with Hennepin County and Hennepin Healthcare Systems is we work in close partnership with integrated services, and that includes in regards to some of our programs, serving persons who are experiencing chronic homelessness. So for an example, on the county and the housing side, we have our Healthcare for the Homeless program. It is integrated in partnership with Hennepin Healthcare Systems. And so as we look at how to serve patients the best way possible, preventing deep end services, emergency room admissions, providing health care accessible for residents where they are at, we also want to do it in a way that is providing the best model that delivers that services, but also maximizing federal dollars. So the example I provided in the housing with our health care for the homeless is a federally qualified health care model. So part of our work as we partner, as you've heard, healthcare will always need to look at how do we manage our expenses, how are we looking at efficiencies, and how are we providing healthcare services in the best way possible that is best for the patients and maximizes federal dollars. Some of the intent of this language would give us that capability.
Great. Representative Swedzinski.
Thank you. So it does sound like that section does potentially allow for these funds to be used as a pretty wide berth for that. So not just hospital-related, like emergencies, doctors, nurses. I mean, we're concerned about the hospital closing. That's what we heard the last hour. And it seems like this has the potential to be moved way past that. And so I think that's just clear. And that would be kind of my secondary. It sounds like my second question that I had been thinking about is how, you know, if this is to move forward, you know, how can we ensure that the dollars are going to be focused simply on the hospital? And it sounds like that's not necessarily the case. And so, you know, I appreciate Representative Edge's answer to that being that this is a first draft, and to Representative Danny Nadeau, I appreciate your guys' work together on it. But I do have a potential follow-up question.
Please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to the county potentially to focus, you know, it's estimated that I think what $370 million will be generated through this tax. Currently, what does the county put into the hospital system currently?
Administrator Wendland, I also see Mr. Matthews, who's the chief financial officer of the county, coming up. He might be better positioned. So please introduce yourself as you get started.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. Representative, I'm Joe Matthews. I'm the chief financial officer for Hennepin County. Today in 2026, we levy $38 million a year of property tax for Hennepin County Medical Center. We do that through our uncompensated care formula, and that comes out of our operating budget. We also, the county owns the real estate and the property that the hospital operates, and so all of the improvements for those buildings go through our capital improvement program, and we levy property tax dollars to pay that debt service. Currently, in our current five-year CIP, we have about $250 million planned. The needs, you know, likely are to exceed that, but again, our CIP gets reviewed every year through a public process and is adopted by the county board.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a follow-up to that.
Representative Sudzinski.
So it sounds like, so from a property tax standpoint, it sounds like there's $38 million that are levied on local property taxpayers just for the simple running of the hospital. So the actual, like, nuts and bolts of paying doctors, paying nurses, keeping the lights on. And then on top of that, then there's also a property levy that is, you said that you're planning on $250 million of potential for expansion. Is that building buildings? Is that on top of the $38 million? And then what is the current levy? So if you're planning on another $250 million, what is the current levy for property management, properties, that sort of thing, to keep running? So what's the total? If it's 38 for the hospital, plus kind of what?
Yeah, Mr. Matthews.
Chair Gomez, representative. So just to clarify, so our capital improvement program, you know, much like as you plan your improvements around your buildings here in St. Paul and across the state, most of our funding is for asset preservation. The one piece that we have looked at is the current parking ramp is in pretty bad shape and is going to need to be replaced. That's about a $100 million project. And so that's something that, regardless of what happens, we need to address. We don't have funding in the current CIP to build a new facility. What we do on an annual basis, we have a process through our capital budgeting task force, which includes representatives of the community that makes recommendations to the county board through our open budgeting process. They look at the projects and the needs of the hospital, along with all of our other facilities that the county operates, and they make recommendations to county administration. Both that task force and the county administrator present their separate recommendations to the county board as part of our budget process in the fall. Our current debt levy is roughly $120 million per year. And unlike the state, we do not issue one series of bonds for each project. We issue bonds based on the whole capital. So the hospital's share is wrapped up in that current debt levy that we have. And I'd be more than happy to provide you we have a copy of our capital budgeting book online. You can see what's in there for the hospital. It's publicly available on our website, but I'd also be happy to just follow up with you. There is a memorandum that was provided to some of your colleagues in the Senate that also speaks to the capital needs at HHS, if that's helpful.
Great. Representative Sudzinski, yes, I also just want to add that through the conversations that we've had, there's also just two other things I wanted to mention, which were that you know, there's the need for purchases of supplies and equipment that exceed sort of the budget of the hospital. And last year, I believe it was, there was $15 million. That's Hennepin County property tax dollars, right? And we talked about kind of the payer mix, the patient mix in terms of geography. So, you know, like a third of those folks coming from outside of the county, but, you know, me and my property taxpayers and Representative Robbins is, and some other folks, property taxpayers, are footing that part of it. The other piece is that we talked when we met before, and we kind of saw more of the detailed financial overview from the different parties. They talked about the cash on hand issue that was really exacerbated after the UCARE issue came up, and that since then, due to a lack of day-to-day cash on hand and, you know, their $30-plus million biweekly payroll and the need to meet that and the kind of lag in their ability to bill, the people of Hennepin County are sort of floating that, some of that money out of our reserves, right, to the hospital so that they can make their payroll And that money comes back, you know, but it is, you know, it is like the county's backstop, and our property taxpayers funded backstop is being used already to subsidize this critical statewide asset in a number of ways. So I don't know if anybody else has anything to add to that before we go back to Chair Swidzinski. Okay. Chair Swidzinski.
Yeah, thank you. I'm not trying to monopolize by any chance, but
no, it's okay.
So it does sound like 38 million. So about a third of the funds are hospital related, and then from direct use, and then the rest. Is there any plan? So we talked a lot about Chair Gomez talked a little bit about kind of that property tax standpoint. is there a plan from the county's perspective? So if the sales tax portion moves forward, to then kind of repeal and replace those property taxes that are currently going in, that $120 million a year from Hennepin County property taxpayers, that this sales tax would then replace those property taxes that are currently being paid? Is there a guarantee that the county, because it is Hennepin County Medical Center, that those property taxes would remain in place as kind of a baseline of support for the hospital, and then the sales tax would come on top of it? Or is the idea that the $340 million generated would then just, you know, come in, replace those property taxes, take those off the rolls, and the sales tax would be the main driver for the funding of the hospital?
Mr. Matthews?
Yeah, Chair Gomez, Representative, we have not had a detailed conversation on what would happen with the $38 million, to be candid. I think the reality is we've really leaned into the ongoing need, and I think that decision has to be taken in the context of whatever a path forward looks like from the legislature. And the county certainly does not want to be in a position where we are withdrawing needed resources and crippling a critical institution. I will share that over the past several years, you know, it wasn't that long ago, we levied $28 million. And in the past few years, we've increased that to 38. And frankly, that was part of what we were seeing as a growing trend in uncompensated care at the hospital. And that's also when we started to recognize that their needs were going to outpace our ability to raise that revenue through the property tax. And so I think we really look at this holistically. I also know that there will be conversation around, you know, what the hospital's future looks like in terms of the services it provides. And to the previous question around, and Administrator Wetland's comments around services that are provided in conjunction with the county or through, you know, other coordinated facilities, you know, we really think we have to look at the totality of that. And I would not want to speak for our board, but we have not had a conversation about that with them.
Representative Swidzinski.
Thank you. So it sounds like there's quite a bit of work that needs to get done when it comes to what this would actually look like. It's, you know, we're being told at one point that this hospital may close down in June, but it seems like there's a lot of conversations that have yet to be happening when it comes to the actual funding from the county perspective, and if the state doesn't make any moves when it comes to potentially allowing this to happen. And, you know, we serve on the energy, on the chair of the Energy Committee, and one of the areas that we really look at when it comes to potential new generation, whether it's generation of electricity or revenue, efficiencies in electrical use oftentimes is the cheapest and the most economical way to go about slimming down the amount of grid need that we need, whether it's better lights or whatever. What is the county doing? And I've heard that there's been proposals moved before the county board, to find real efficiencies when it comes to the cost of care and what's going on at the hospital. And it sounded like there's potentially an administrator that walked out because of this. Kind of where are those conversations? Because obviously there's a lot of talking going on. But what's the hospital doing? What's the county doing to really get down to the nuts and bolts of shaving the cost of this institution as one of the most efficient ways in order to operate a hospital?
I see Administrator Wetland coming back up. Administrator Wetland, please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. In regards to what efforts the county has been doing, as was shared, as the county began working, especially starting in July of last year, the county had learned that the hospital actually was near closure at the end of the year. And so the county board really stepped in to provide the stabilization and how can we keep this hospital going and giving it a path for us to look at stabilization. County had to intervene even greater. As shared, the UCARE event provided even more substantial impact to a hospital that was already fragile with very limited days cash on hand. So actions that were taken was a reduction of over 100 workforce that just occurred in January of this year. There were five programs that were shut down. These were programs that were important programs, but we had to make difficult decisions with the programs. There have been impacts to benefits for employees. There are hard hiring holds that are impacting. So the reduction, the hold of 100 beds is due to the facts that the hospital's not able to hire right now. So we have to ensure based on hospital standards that our staffing is available for the programs. And so the reduction of the beds, which will be a pressure point when summer comes due to volume issues for the hospital. Within that, there were further looking at what else, because that was just to assist in stabilizing. The county has shared, the county has been being the backstop for the hospital's payroll since January. And myself and the chief financial officer have been working with the county board around what we feel is the capacity of the county to continue to provide the backstop for the payroll. Within that, we know also that there was more work that needs to be done and will be continued. There have been ongoing plans of what additional reductions or efficiencies need to occur. What is the focus and the specialty of the hospital? And so those plans have been, and there's been amazing work done, and they are difficult plans and difficult choices within that. At this point in time, we are looking at all of that, and as you've heard, part of the challenge with the efforts that I just shared have been done over the last couple of months. It has resulted in some substantial impacts, helped in regards to some of the cash flow, but also impact stability of workforce. We have lost some critical healthcare positions that is needed for the hospital. It is impacting the hospital's ability to continue to provide that level one trauma. So the county board is really looking at that and determining how best to proceed with those future needs of reductions. Some of them will need to occur. Some of them, dependent upon what is the outcome, will have to occur. And frankly, the need of the hospital is so great, it is unclear as whether or not that will be sufficient to meet the needs of the hospital.
Thank you. We got to, yeah, okay. Representative Davids.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And this is probably for Ms. Wendland or Mr. Matthews. Within the past week, HCMC's CEO, Dr. J. Kevin Croston and David Ho, have both stepped down, with Dr. Croston citing concerns about micromanagement by county commissioners. Apparently, and we've talked about this some before, there was a plan submitted, and it was not approved by the board. Can I see that plan? I know you're going to talk to attorneys, or is it like top secret? You could show me, but you'd have to, whatever.
Administrator Wendland.
And what is the disagreement over, basically? If he came with a thoughtful plan and it was rejected, what happened there?
Administrator Wendland.
Chair Gomez, Chair Davids, thank you for the question. The disagreement was not on the plan. The disagreement is the timing of the plan. And so the plan that has been put together is looking at how to continue to address the ongoing financial challenges and the fiscal gap of the hospital. And it is the timing, because it's a pretty substantial, as I shared, there have been a significant cuts and reductions that have occurred that has had impact to close and five program closures. The next phase of that plan is much more substantive and larger that impacts programs and staffing capacity for the hospital. And so in that piece of it, I just want to acknowledge, first of all, the work and the time and commitment that actually the co-administrators, Dr. Croston and David Hoff, have provided in supporting this hospital in addressing that immediate crisis in January to help stabilize the dollar amount in regards to the hospital's day's cash on hand, and then did the work to identify what are the additional cuts or reductions or efficiencies that need to be done. In regards to the access for that information, we are right now, we have lateraled that to the hospital for them to work with legal counsel. You know, as you're aware, healthcare information is protected information, competitive data. And so we're working through our hospital legal counsel to determine what can we provide, and we are working quickly to get you as much information as we can.
Okay.
Chair Davids.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And first of all, I'd just like to thank you, Madam Chair, for holding this hearing. This is so important, and we have to get this right. And we have 6 weeks, and so I just thank you for your attention on this matter. I guess my last question on this before I would do a wrap up later is, what's the governor, we talked about this before, what's the governance plan looking like? And I know there's a report due by, what is it, June 1st? I'm not sure how the legislature makes a decision if we don't know anything about how this place is going to be governed.
Administrator Wendland.
Chair Gomez, Chair Davids, I want to make sure I heard the question. What is the governor's?
Governance.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, governance. What is the governance? Who's going to be running this? I don't think the county board wants to do this forever, would be my guess. They'd rather sell Amway or something. I'm not sure how the legislature makes a decision on this without knowing how this, who's going to be running the show.
Administrator Wendland.
Chair Gomez, Chair Davids, thank you. In regards to the governance plan, and I think I can quite confidently say yes, the county board's plan is for this to be temporary, and they were quite clear when they stepped into that role in August of 2025. The Hennepin County Board of Commissioners actually have put together a board action resolution that gives direction to me or a designee to actually work to identify and bring back information to help guide that future governance. The importance that board action took place in December of 2025. Key elements of that was to look at the past governance to determine what worked well in there. Really looking at opportunities for improving transparency of our healthcare system, alignment with the work that we do, improving engagement with our community, our workforce, patients that are being served, and supporting that. In the actions that are being taken in the work plan that is in place to respond to that direction by the Hennepin County Board of Commissioners, there are three items of the work plan that have been underway. Number one is to evaluate the current state of HHS governance. So really understanding and reviewing the statutory framework that's in place. Most recently also looking at the bylaws of the hospital and the county transactional documents. As Mr. Matthews indicates, there's a lot of transactional relationship between us and HHS for both the capital needs and the operating needs of the hospital. Number two, there is work right now underway to evaluate governance of comparable public health care systems across the country. And what do those governance structure look like to support
Administrator
them?
Wendland, I'm sorry, could you just wrap up your answer? We have a very long list. Sorry.
Absolutely. And third, to do comprehensive interviews with key stakeholders.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Davids, are you good for now?
For now,
okay. So we do have seven, I think, members on the list. We have about 9 minutes of committee left, so I just would ask members to be considerate of that reality. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to all the testifiers today. I'm not going to go over the great things about Hennepin County because we all heard that several times this year and how important they are to us in this area, but I just got some data here. And what I'm also seeing is something maybe the authors didn't see is that the closest level one trauma center in western Wisconsin is Milwaukee. And that could explain some of the problems we are having with our level ones. We have three of them in the metro. And the big deal about Hennepin is it's not a safety net. It is a big pillow because whatever doesn't get caught in the other ones goes to Hennepin. I know that from working on the streets myself. I think that we really got to look at this. This is an option, but we need to come up with a bigger option. I hate that we're depending on a ballpark tax because we all know in a recession, ballpark taxes, people don't go to the ballpark, right? So I think this is a great bandage, but we need a trauma dressing. We need to look at this as a statewide option and maybe tell them Wisconsin they owe us some money. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was presenting a bill in judiciary and missed the first part of the discussion, so I apologize if I'm repeating anyone else's comments.
And I know we're getting close to time, so I'll just offer a few. Safety net hospitals like Hennepin Healthcare and North Memorial are they're facing fiscal cliffs because of federal cuts and the growth of uncompensated care. So we need a solution for safety net hospitals generally. Places like Regions and Essentia, they're facing similar problems. The ballpark tax has been discussed for a few years to address the immediate issues with Hennepin Health and North Memorial. And kind of like Representative Hewitt, I don't know that the ballpark tax is the perfect mechanism to solve it. The service areas for HCMC and North Memorial are much broader than Hennepin County. I mean, I recall one of our colleagues was at their cabin in northern Minnesota, had an accident with a saw, and got airlifted to North Memorial. We know they have a statewide reach, and I got permission from them to mention that here. And we heard other examples from Dr. Gibson of the statewide reach, and that's obviously very true of Hennepin Health as well. So I don't know that it's fair to ask Hennepin County taxpayers to bear the full cost here, but at the same time, there is a logic to dedicating the proceeds of this tax for HCMC and North, since both entities are physically located in Hennepin County. And this proposal does seem to have momentum, which can certainly mean everything here at the legislature. So funding for these safety nets is a critical need. Really appreciate your work on this, Representative Igbaje and Representative Nadeau, and look forward to discussing this as the session goes on.
Thank you, Representative Freiberg. Representative Hollins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be as quick as possible. I guess my question is, we've heard a lot about HCMC and why it's so important and why it's in these really dire situations. I'm wondering why we're including North and the Twins in this, because clearly one seems to be on the brink of complete failure, and it's the one that we need the most, that is serving the widest population, and is a huge employer in the county. So,
Representative Igbaje.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hollins. I'll try to be quick. I mean, I think this is sort of based on a process that has had a number of discussions over the past several years, and so this is the framework that we decided to use. It is true, as Representative Freiberg said, North Memorial also serves a large number of patients across Hennepin County and across the state, also serving as a level one trauma center. So that part, you know, kind of makes sense as to why both would be together. But I think, you know, it's fair to raise questions as to if Hennepin is facing this dire need, you know, how can we service the others? And then, of course, the Twins are involved because this is the original tax that helped pave the way for the Twins Stadium. So I'll just keep it.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Howard.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be brief as well. I really think, you know, as everyone said, that the top priority in this bill and for this legislature is to make sure that we save HCMC. I think that's so crystal clear. I do have a quick question for someone with North Memorial.
Somebody from North Memorial please come up?
We had a discussion when we had the general hearing about the potential sale of North Memorial, which is relevant to this conversation. And I was just curious if there's an update on that.
Mr. Sawalish.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. As I mentioned last time, yes, we have communicated to our organization that we are going to be seeking an acquisitional partner. The strain on healthcare is just leaving it to the point that we cannot see a path forward without finding ways to invest in this community, and the only way we're going to be able to do that is with a partner.
Thank you, Mr. Swalish. I'm sorry, we have like five more members, but
the bottom line is we lost $50 million at Robbinsdale last year. It doesn't matter whose name is on the door. If we don't find a way to improve that
Thank you, Mr. Swalish. Representative Howard, do you have anything else?
Just very quickly, I don't want to bring it up to ask a question, but I will say the notion of the Minnesota Twins being part of this and sort of being first in line does irk me a little bit, given what we've seen from the Minnesota Twins over the last number of years. I mean, the Twins' payroll is down more than $40 million from last year. They're now actually at a point lower than when they opened Target Field. And to state the obvious, this has irked a lot of Minnesota Twins fans and the public that go to Target Field and want to see the Twins compete and win. And I think we've seen that in some of the empty seats or sections at Target Field this year. And now the Twins are here asking for the public for more and to sort of be first in line. And it sort of begs the question, if the public is going to be providing more an increased level of support, including their tax dollars, what are the owners of the Minnesota Twins doing to show Minnesotans that they want to put out a product, a team that Minnesotans want to come and watch and play. And so I'm not putting that question to anyone here, but I think it's a fair question for the Pollad family to answer to Minnesotans.
Thank you, Representative Howard. We're kind of going to have to keep it to statements pretty much from now on. Representative Robbins?
Oh, goodness. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you to the authors. I do have a question if somebody from North Memorial, not North,
Representative Robbins, we can have more discussions about this, but just need to get to the chair.
Okay. Well, yeah. I would love them to come back, especially the county people, and we could ask these questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Johnson?
I'm going to pass.
Okay. Representative Elkins?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll keep this quickly as well. So I think most of us understand that the fundamental problem here is the hospital's finances hinge on their patient mix. So commercial and employer plans pay on average almost twice Medicare for hospital services, while Medicaid only pays about 70% of Medicare for hospital services. So if you're a suburban hospital serving mostly commercial plan members, you're doing fine. But if you're a hospital like HCMC or many of our rural safety net hospitals that serve mostly Medicaid patients, you're hurting, and no hospital in the state is hurting more than HCMC, which is why we're here today. But a sales tax in Hennepin County isn't the right way to address this. So if we proceed with this proposal as written, the Hennepin County sales tax in most Hennepin County communities is going to be 10%.
We've got to speed it up a little, Mr. Representative.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So, you know, Representative Nadeau has identified an existing alternative revenue source in his House File 4143. There's a 1.56 hospital surcharge going into the general fund. If we took that money, and which all hospitals pay into, and used it, funneled that money into the hospitals like HCMC that need it, basically the rich hospitals cross-subsidizing the poor hospitals, this would be a much more appropriate way to address this.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. We're going to go back to Representative Robbins because we have a few seconds. The chair and I just talked. We probably need to have another, devote some more committee time to this bill, it seems like. So, Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if someone from Hennepin County could come up, it's about the uncompensated care or the charity care. So I'll start the question while you're approaching the testifier table. So there was an annual hospital report that was submitted to the Department of Health where it showed that HCMC's total charity care contracts rose from $50,000 in 2022 to $160,000 in 2023 to $192,000 in 2024. This is substantially higher than any of the other public hospitals. Regions went actually down from 76,000 to 27,000, and North Memorial stayed flat at about 3,000, roughly. So how has this impacted the financial problems that HCMC is having, and why are these numbers so enormous and going and trending so opposite of the other trauma hospitals in the area? Thank you.
Mr. Matthews, briefly, as I said, I mean, this is the kind of question we're going to have to move to another committee hearing, it sounds like.
Madam Chair,
if you have anything,
quickly. Representative, I would actually, our CFO for the hospital is not available today, but I would actually love to bring him back to answer that question. That
sounds like
a pretty complicated one. I just think
appropriate. Okay, great. And I, you know, I'll just, if anybody has any questions, please put them together and we'll get them answered. Chair Davids.
Thank you so much, and I'm not going to be brief. Everybody says they're going to be, no, I'll be brief. Again, thank you for this hearing. Very, very important, and I hope we can get some more time on this, get some more questions answered. But the way I see this playing out, it's a triangle. We got the Twins, we got HCMC and North Memorial, and nothing's going to move unless that triangle is complete, number one. So that has to be done. This is, you know, the Twins are a very, very small part of this, and I think we need, I hope the county board and the Twins can negotiate a deal and get that part off the table. Members, we have to get this right, and what we're struggling with is 68, 34, and 1. We have to have 68 votes in the House, 34 in the Senate, one governor to sign it. So we have to put that together. I agree. I hope we don't have to have a one-time fix because I don't know how you recruit with a one-time fix. That's a real problem there. So again, I hope that that the county and the Twins can cut a deal that they can both agree to. HCMC is a different structure. It is so important. As I said, we've got 6 weeks to do this. There is an urgency to this, and I don't just want to band-aid. I've coined a new phrase. I want them not just to survive but to thrive. It reminds me of no taxation without representation. Who said that?
You did. Tea Party. You did.
The Tea Party.
James Otis Jr. in the 1760s.
It wasn't the Tea Party, I'm pretty sure.
No, no. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know that we're going to go to Representative Agbaje for last word. As I said, seems like we need some more conversation here. And we thank Representative Nadeau, Representative Agbaje, everybody for being here today. Representative Agbaje, any final thoughts?
Thank you all for the time today. I hope we get more time in the future. I think I will just kind of echo what everyone has said, that this is our safety net hospital. We have to protect it. We have to find a way to do that. And we have to be sure that we are making sure that we're putting people first as we engage in these conversations and figure out what is actually the best way forward. Thank you.
Excellent. With that, Representative Agbaje is going to renew her motion that House File 4841 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2026 tax bill. The bill's laid over. We're keeping you in suspense about the next meeting, and we are adjourned.